Good afternoon and welcome to Lunch with Leaders. I'm Cindy Morgan, the Vice President of Learning and Organizational Development, and I'm really happy that you're here this afternoon. So thanks so much for coming. I hope you can take an hour and just sit back in your chair, turn off your Outlook and MS Teams, and just really be present to share your knowledge with others as well as hear from our great guests today. So welcome. So what's Lunch with Leaders? This is a safe space where we can come together in community as leaders across Penn Medicine and share with one another. It's been really hard to be a leader. And truth be told, it's always really hard to be a leader. So you're in good company with those who are joining us today. So I just want to remind you, all of our back episodes are available on the Lead Strong webpage. Let's talk a little bit about last show because it was really good. How good were Roy Rosen and Dr. Sindhu Srinivas from Women's Health Service Line talking about creative problem solving? I know I thought that they were just fantastic. I always love getting feedback from Lunch with Leaders superfan, Dr. Chris Miller. He thought that the show was chock full of great stories and that survey respondents, as you can see, felt very similarly. They thought it was filled with practical tips, engaging speakers, and real life examples of people getting to really solve at the root of the problem instead of just trying to make things better on the surface. So thinking differently about failure was also something that was frequently cited. And as promised, for those of you who joined us on the last show, you may remember Dr. Srinivas revealing that her hidden talent that people didn't know about her was that through before and throughout medical school, she was a professional dancer. And here's proof. How gorgeous is she? So she actually did a 2-hour dance with a live orchestra to finalize her professional dancing. And these are some of the pictures from it. I hope that your admiration for Sindhu will continue to grow as we look at these great images of her. I know mine does. I'm like such a super fan. So thought I would definitely follow up on that. If you missed it, I hope I've whet your appetite just a little, or at least piqued your curiosity. You'll want to go back and check it out on the Lead Strong page. It's a great one to watch with your teams and really form a discussion as well. If you won't find, it's well worth the time. Okay, Youngin, come on. We've got a few plugs. Before you give them, though, I need to shout out G. Kolb, managing the chat today. Thanks for coming, Gretchen. And we have first-timer PMA office manager Jesse Thomas running the slides today. I got to give a big shout out to Jesse. He is responsible for all things operational within the Penn Medicine Academy. She's the rock solid foundation for everything we do. Big shout out to Jesse. She always entertains my office shenanigans. Lately, I'm all about In the Heights. I was trying to sing and dance very badly to the soundtrack, and she just shook her head and told me maybe I should stick to doing organizational development and learning. Probably good advice, Jesse. Thanks for stepping up. All right, Youngin, 2 plugs today, as well as the event code. Go ahead, take it away, Youngin.
Thanks, Cindy. Hi, everyone. It's great to have you here. Thank you to all those who joined last book club with Kevin and Adam Grant. I thought the conversation was absolutely refreshing. So many great insight, both professionally and personally too. He said the world is changing constantly. And he said, unless we rethink and adapt, we're going to be experts in a world that doesn't exist. I was blown away. So please check out the replay if you weren't able to make it. And don't forget to check out the chat as well. And the next slide, we have saved the date for the next book club, which is going to be Wednesday, September 29th, 7 to 8. The book is going to be How to Change. It's a brand new book that just came out in May. It's a Wall Street Journal bestseller by Katie Milkman, who is another amazing Wharton professor. She's devoted her career to studying behavior change, and she'll talk about a science-based blueprint for achieving your goals. So don't miss it. We'll have the communication come out soon, and I'm really looking forward to it. I hope you can join us too. And then one more on CMEC credit. So make sure you have a profile on the CME website and use the text-in code and text in today's event code, which is 728762215398672. It's open right now for next 24 hours. The event handout is on the Lee Strong website. For questions, reach out directly to the CME office. Thank you and enjoy the show.
Thanks, Yangin. I would love to hear from anyone about your feedback on the Adam Grant Book Club. I thought it was really awesome. I also, well, you know, it was originally supposed to be on the 30th. So make sure you're getting the playback out to your team. So many people were excited about coming, and then we had the last minute change. But I think that Roy and Sindhu and the creative problem solving coupled with Adam Grant's Think Again Book Club, boy, it's a perfect combo. So maybe you want to share both with your teams and then have discussions. I'd love any feedback in the chat. All right, let's talk about today's session because it's going to be hot. True confessions all day, every day. I think about one thing, manifesting potential. You know it. And if you know me, you know I'm always thinking about this. Whether it's in people, your teams, my team, myself, yourself, heck, it's even our tagline for PMA. Growing people. My job and your job, and frankly, it's my passion as well. Identifying people with potential, growing people, developing people, getting people promoted to jobs that they're really excited about. Can't stop, won't stop, you can't make me. If you can relate, today's show's for you. This construct of potential, it's really the anchor of the personal talent management strategy and the foundation of how we have evolved, how we're looking at talent here at Penn Medicine. So today we're going to unpack all things potential. What does that even mean? How do you spot it? How do you develop it? Why does it even matter? So here are the objectives in terms of what we're going to do. I love hearing from you. It's like my favorite part in addition to the guests. But use the chat. If you have questions for our guests today or for me, you want to share, I'm dying to hear from you on the chat too. So shoot me any questions and I'll do what I can to incorporate them. All right, let's start with a question to you though. How are you doing? Let's pull out our phones. Let's do a poll. Text Penn Medicine 918-222-333. You know what to do. You'll now get in the survey. If you have a problem, let us know. Gretchen will help you. What emotions are you feeling today? By the way, this is the 29th time I've asked you this question, and we really listen to your answers, and we've been tracking that. Maybe next show I'll show you where we're tracking. I'm glad to hear that people like the book club, but if you missed it, not to worry. We got the playback. So while you're telling me how you feel today, it is my great honor to introduce our three guests for today's show. Dr. Mitch Schnall, who is the chair of the Department of Radiology. Chris Tierney, our chief human resources officer at Pennsylvania Hospital. And welcome back to our leading talent management expert, Michelle Weitzman-Garcia. We're really lucky to have all three of you join me on camera. Welcome to the show, Chris, Mitch. Welcome back, Michelle. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Doing great.
All right, let's take a look. Let's take a look, Jesse, on how people are feeling today. Jesse, you did it. Good job. All right, let's see. Burn. Okay. I'm thinking that's not sunburn, but maybe a bit of burnout. But it is the summer, so you never know. Someone could be watching us beachside. Overwhelmed, tired, deflated, hopeful, great, happier. Happier is good. Foggy, crummy. I've been feeling a little crummy myself. I think I have a little bit of a GI bug because, you know, heaven forbid you go out without a mask and these germs are all in the air again because, you know, you leave your house and you can get kind of sick. So great. Mitch, did these words surprise you?
Not at all, based on what I'm hearing from and seeing in our faculty and staff.
Chris, these words surprise you?
No, same thing. I started to feel like we were a little bit more over the hump from the stressed and overwhelmed, but we're not. So it's great that people are sharing.
All right, Jesse, thank you so much. Let me start. I'm dying to jump into this topic, so I'm really glad that the three of you are here. Michelle, let me start with you. Kind of like me, your career has been like totally focused on talent management strategies to really accelerate businesses and business strategy. You have your PhD in industrial and organizational psychology. You're an expert in working with expert industries like ours in this, and we love working with you. So could you run us through the basics? What's potential? Does everyone have it? Is this the same as someone being good at their job?
You know, it's interesting because I think a lot of people confuse being good at their job with people having potential. And so it's not quite the same thing. Everyone has some amount of potential. Really, it's about figuring out how to maximize people's potential, figure out what it is and what they have, and really begin to kind of fulfill the promise there that everybody has in some way, shape, or form.
Great. I think you have some slides. Jesse, if you wouldn't mind putting up the slides, that would be really great so we can kind of walk through some of Michelle's expertise. Oh, here we go. Thanks, Jess.
Here we go. Next one.
Here we go. So the basics, you want to run through any of these in more depth?
It's not limited to those people only. Talk about everybody. So your job is to find the people who have the most potential and really groom them for future leadership. You can see and measure potential. So for those of you who have taken my behavioral class, you know, my behavioral classes, we've had these conversations before. Potential is no different than any of the competencies.
So Michelle, just summarize those main things. You can see and measure potential. Potential and performance, not the same. We're really here to like groom potential.
Correct. The other thing too is that you can have somebody with high potential that also doesn't match the potential needed in the job. So a different kind of twist on that, which is high potential in the wrong job is not great there.
Great. So, Jesse, if you can go to the next slide. So, can you talk a little bit about the four components of potential? How are we looking at this? How do we break it down into something a bit more granular, Michelle?
Yeah, you know, it's changed over time. So, learning agility used to be the sole focus of looking at it. And that's really the ability to figure out what to do when you don't know what to do.
And Jesse, if you wouldn't mind taking down the slides, I want to turn it over to Chris Tierney while we try to get Michelle back up from a tech perspective. We'll come back to you, Michelle. Hopefully we can get that lined up. Chris, thanks for joining us here. You've had a really interesting career journey from pediatric nursing and then recruitment and then progressively more strategic human resources roles. You've worked with Michelle and very closely with PMA and me. How does potential factor into the way you look at talent management? Can you share some of your own expertise?
Yeah, so I think, you know, as Michelle had the one slide up there about high performers and high potential, you know, that's a really interesting point because just because you perform really well in your job doesn't necessarily make you a high potential. For me, as I've gone through life, I have been lucky, I believe, that I've had bosses that have recognized the high potential, and I definitely have had a very interesting career to go from a pediatric ICU nurse to a CHRO. But I've tried to apply those same kind of, I call them like talent search. That's what I feel like. I'm on a kind of game show sometimes trying to spot top talent and then developing them. I was just talking to someone here the other day in the organization that is on their third role now, all progressively increasing. And he and I had a conversation four and a half years ago when I first started here about his potential. So my approach is kind of always looking for talent. I'm always trolling for talent.
That's great. Mitch, I'm glad you're here. In my mind, you are that potential personified. Your background reminds me a little bit of Dr. Peter Quinn's Penn through and through. I think 31 years from Penn undergrad, collegiate athlete, medical school, getting your PhD, successful research career to chair of radiology. No doubt that you have a lot of high potentials on your team helping to make radiology one of the top in the country. In your mind, what does it take to consider someone a high potential? What are the characteristics that mark somebody?
Well, I look for a lot of the same characteristics that were mentioned before. I mean, I'm looking a lot to see people who they're learning agility by being willing to get outside of their comfort zone. People who will pick up new things, learn them quickly, and are willing to. So it's not just the ability to learn, but the confidence that you can learn. And I think at Penn, that's particularly important. We're in a very matrixed environment where org charts are relatively poorly defined. There's a lot of gray zones between people's responsibilities, and you have to have that ability to get outside your comfort zone and the confidence to do it in order to be successful here. That's certainly one of the main things I look for. Also looking for folks that their colleagues enjoy being around them, their colleagues respect them, really illustrates that they have some of that emotional intelligence and can interface with their colleagues and engage their colleagues. I think those are among the most important things I'm looking for in sort of thinking about future leaders.
Thanks, Mitch. Is it the same criteria as you're evaluating potential in physicians and administrators, or is it different for docs?
Well, when I'm thinking about leadership, really, it's fairly similar. I will say, though, the practice of medicine in general is a relatively expert endeavor, and people who are going to be leaders as physician leaders, they have to have the respect of their colleagues in the practice of medicine. So there's a little bit more of an expert tilt towards the physician leaders than I may see in some of the administrative leadership. And that's necessary for them to really have that respect of their colleagues as expert clinicians.
Thanks. That's a real tough balance because it's like Goldilocks. You can't have too much expertise. You can't have too little expertise. You got to hit the right balance depending on your craft and your field as well. Thanks for sharing that. Michelle, I think you're back.
I think you're back too.
We're good. Thank God I'm nothing if not agile, and that is my mantra because I thought I might have a panic attack. So, Michelle, maybe Jesse, would you mind going back to the third slide? How do you spot potential? And once you spot it, how do you best develop it? Next slide, Jess. Thanks.
You know, it's interesting because you can see it in people, and it's a lot of what Mitch was just talking about with how they're showing up and what I mentioned before. But when you're interviewing for someone, I really want you to be thinking about how much potential you really need in the role. Building on Mitch's thoughts there around, you know what, look, I need an expert clinician, and that's where we're going to start their career. I don't want so much potential because people with potential tend to go really broad, right? They don't want to go as deep. So really think about how much potential you need in a role. We have a couple of competencies that we've kind of identified here: managing ambiguity, nimble learning, being resilient, get at the heart of potential. And the one that even if you don't have any of those other pieces, right, the one thing that you can do in an interview is really ask, what did you learn from that experience and how did you apply it, right? So what did you take away from that? Remember I said before that people with a lot of potential can articulate the learnings. Really thinking that through or asking those questions and seeing what the answer is.
Why is that the differentiator?
Because what people with a lot of potential do is they reflect on their situations, they make sense of that, they internalize their learnings, and they use them as ways of going forward. So if you go to the idea of figuring out what to do when you don't know what to do, they have lots of things that they can pull from to figure out what to do. And so this is really about internalizing experiences. And they're able to articulate that.
Great. Is this the same for all people, regardless of gender or background?
It is. There's no difference. We don't find a difference in people. Gender, men and women have the same amount of potential. There's I know there's a lot of focus in a lot of organizations around people of color, and everyone has very similar potential. Like everybody has, it's not heavily loaded one way or another. And so I want you to be open to what may happen, however, though, from a diversity standpoint, is those experiences may look really different, right? So You might have somebody who grows up in a neighborhood that has to, you know, kind of has very different experiences than another person who grows up in a very different sort of environment. Doesn't mean that they have more or less potential. Their experiences, however, are just maybe very different.
Thanks. Are there any downsides to high potentials? Let's go to the next slide.
Absolutely. Downsides, they are not very patient. What they really struggle with on the whole are these things around people. So they're the ones who are, they can get themselves into political trouble. They can become, they have high expectations. They are not loyal. They're all of those sorts of things, right? So their big issues are around people. The other piece is too, a couple of other things. If they are not being leveraged, they can change things unnecessarily. They are faster. They tend to be faster than other people. They get easily bored. And they are not necessarily rules compliant. So putting structure around them is sometimes a challenge.
Thank you. Jesse, you can take down the slides. I want to ask the audience, what are the characteristics that you notice around high performers? Do you relate to what Mitch, Chris, and Michelle have talked about, or do you look for other characteristics? I would love to hear that. Chris, I'm sure you've seen some people have some of those downside or the shadow side to these superpowers around potential. What have been those successful strategies that you've used to engage high potentials? How do you keep people focused and pushing forward?
I think you have to challenge them appropriately. And I hear what Michelle's saying about, you know, you want to hold on to people, but you don't want to hold on to them too long either. So with your high potentials, you have to set up, you know, enough challenges, enough things that they can accomplish so that there's that always learning, always growing. And then, quite frankly, know when to set them free or when to say, you know, you've learned everything you can here and it's time to move on. So, you know, it's almost like, you know, cultivating it and letting it grow to the right point and then really saying you're good.
Thanks. Mitch, what about you? What are some of your success stories around engaging high potentials?
Yeah, it's actually pretty similar. It's trying to set them up in a situation where you can challenge them to try to do something that maybe otherwise that you thought that they couldn't do or that they thought that they couldn't do. Actually, one of my greatest mentors was my PhD advisor, and he knew the way to get me to do something was to tell me you couldn't be done. And he would walk by my desk and say, you know, this kind of this would never work. Nobody could get this to work. And he knew that the next day I would try to get it to work. And so that kind of challenging and that kind of pushing forward, I think folks that have a lot of high potential that are natural, you know, leaders, they're going to want to engage that. You know, they're going to want to respond, and that's really something that I think is a great way to get these folks engaged and going forward.
Thanks. I'd add in there, you got to give them really hard problems to chew on and to solve for, and they usually bring a lot of energy and passion to trying to figure out some of those hard things. Let me ask the audience, what strategies have you been successful in using to engage high potentials? I want to also say that Eleanor said that initiative, Anne said resilience, follow through, emotional intelligence, how to manage themselves and others, positive attitude, a thirst for stretch assignments. Impatience sometimes can be very high, a great drive for learning as real characteristics of high performance. Yeah, they can sometimes push you as a leader. I know I have a lot of high potentials, and they're not always so easy. This isn't for the faint of heart managing these people sometimes. They're like keeping me on my toes all the time. So if you're feeling like that, just remember that that's sometimes really common when you have high potentials, right, Michelle?
It is. It's very common. They can be very frustrating. So be patient. Mitch laughs. I know some of his. They are. They're frustrating. They're demanding. They want more. They're looking for that. They're pushing against the system. And you kind of have to go, oh my goodness, what is, you know, you kind of have to keep yourself in check with that. But they can be a handful.
Michelle, technically, Are all high potentials on a leadership track, or can an individual contributor be a high potential and not on an expert or a leadership track? Do experts ever evolve into high potentials? Like, how does that all work?
You know, it's interesting because I think that there's opportunity. People, so I appreciated what Mitch started with, which is you're gonna be trained as an expert in medicine, right? That doesn't mean that you've lost some of your potential. So what that means, though, is that your training and your development and all of that has really forced you onto an expert path. So you can easily morph into a leader or take on a leadership role. It just is kind of what's trained into you. So there's always an element of that. So people can. I have seen quite a few experts, quote unquote, who have moved and kind of grown their potential. It takes some time. You kind of have to re-tap into some of the skills that they have, but they can actually really, they can evolve into something different. It's something that can be developed and kind of rediscovered. Individual contributors versus leaders. Not all, I have seen experts become leaders. I have seen individual contributors just be really strong. They have a lot of potential, but they don't want to take on the people responsibilities of being a leader. And they both can add significant value to the organization.
Thanks. Mitch, has it been your experience that you've watched more expert people become more agile? And were there any techniques that you used to help them evolve?
So we have, and I think the a couple of things about having experts in leadership positions. The first is how you work with them. You have to recognize that they're experts. You have to recognize, you know, that they're going to want to study problems deeply. They're going to want a lot of data around their decision making, and you've got to work with them in that context. I think and that helps them in their ability to be leaders. But I think you also have to have frank conversations about where strengths are, what people's tendencies are. And so if they can internalize that and understand it, then they're in a much better position to be able to lead, even though they carry a sort of more of an expert set of tendencies.
Thanks, well said. Chris, Bob from the chat has asked, how do we as Penn Medicine cultivate non-degreed people with high potential? You have any advice there?
You know, it's what Mitch started to talk about. So it's all about feedback. Not to give a plug for Michelle, but, you know, we've had her here talking about giving effective feedback. And I think for Bob, regardless of where someone is in the organization, clinical, expert, leader, formal leader, high-level executive, it's all about the feedback. So if you give regular, constructive, meaningful feedback, I think it puts people on the right path. And again, not to give the plug for Michelle, but that was really kind of a watershed moment for us here in terms of Cindy, I can't believe I'm going to say this on Lunch with Leaders, but I said to you a couple years ago, you know, sometimes people suck here at feedback. And how we overcome that is that we get better at it. It is a skill. It is a muscle that we have to keep working on. So that would be my advice to Bob. And as someone who started in nursing, I get that. I get that there are people all around the organization, degree, not degree, licensed, not licensed, leader, not a leader, all about feedback.
You know, thanks, Chris. I'll second, third, and fourth that. We went through a set of leadership programs, as you know, Cindy, in our department. A lot of talk about creating a feedback-rich environment fundamentally changed the level and types of conversations we had amongst our leadership team. Unbelievable impact. I think particularly in the physician leadership world, we're not a feedback-rich environment. And I think it's really important to realize that everybody has opportunities, and to talk about them openly and honestly are really important.
Sorry, Chris.
Oh, no, I was giving Mitch it takes courage to do that. And that's what I think Mitch and his team did.
Absolutely. Thank you both for that support. And thanks for Michelle for sharing her expertise with us. PMA has a tremendous amount of tools, resources, course offerings. We want to go deep on this building a feedback-rich environment, because you can hear from two great leaders here that this really does make a difference. Michelle, Patty Einecker, one of our Lunch with Leaders super fans, asks, can you speak more about high performers not being especially loyal to organizations? Because this is a challenging time and, you know, you want your high performers to stick.
Right. So let's stream that together. So you have high performers who may or may not be high potentials. Most of your high potentials are usually high performers. And what I meant by the comment before about high potentials not necessarily being loyal to their organization, they're the ones who, when they feel like they're not getting what they want from the environment, they're the ones who move very quickly, right? So they're like, wait a minute, and it could be real or unreal, which is why their expectations could be real or unreal, which is why the feedback point that Chris and Mitch were making is so critically important. But they will have expectations that they're supposed to have been promoted 4 times by now, and they've been here 2 years, and why hasn't that happened? And I can go to another organization and get what I want to get. And so that's the not very loyal. They are motivated by challenge, learning opportunities, a lot of what we've been talking about here. They can get that anywhere, right? And so it's about how much are they getting from the environment.
Thank you. I'd love to ask the audience, when you're interviewing people, whether they're internal candidates, external candidates, people you know, people you're just meeting, what are the techniques that you use in an interview for figuring out potential? How do you spot people with potential? And while you're answering me in the chat, I got to go to my girl, Chris Tierney. Chris, you've interviewed thousands of people over your career. You've got a good nose for talent. How do you do it?
You know, I love interviewing. I my executive team and I were on an interview the other day, and they knew I was going to take over some of the interviewing. It's all about the behavioral-based interviewing and how you pull that out from people. So, you know, Michelle, you mentioned a couple, you know, key competencies, I'll call them. But I also want to add, kind of, as I said with Mitch, courage and accountability. So you have to frame the questions. You have to listen to the answers. The mistake we make is talking too much in interviews. You have to listen to the answers and not be afraid to go deep and keep saying, give me an example, tell me a time, and how have you learned from that? So I love interviewing. I teach interviewing. It's really still one of my favorite things. And when I get to do it, it's like Christmas morning.
Thanks. Elizabeth said that people that talk about their ability to overcome obstacles and take on stretch assignments in previous roles is a good indicator. Thanks. I agree with that. With behavioral-based interviewing, what you're trying to do is get somebody to tell you about a specific example where they utilize the competency, they utilize the skill. And we know that learning agility and potential, they map to a set of competencies, like Chris said. So those types of questions can be really good. Mitch, same question. What are the techniques you use for interviewing for potential? Like, how do you know when you're interviewing people coming out of medical school that they're going to be leaders in the field of radiology and would be good fit at Penn or have a career ahead of them? And same with leaders, generally speaking.
So obviously, I use a lot of the same methods that Chris just talked about. But the other thing that I tend to focus on is how they communicate and how they connect the dots and think about things. And so I want to get them into something, you know, that they've accomplished or that they've done, and dig a little bit deeper and ask them how, you know, what are they proud about? What have they learned from it? You know, what are they going to take into their next their next opportunity? And the way they can synthesize, the way they think about it at a high level, how crisply they can communicate it, those all tell me a lot about how they're thinking and how they connect the dots. And I think that's an important part of certainly being a physician leader and frankly being a leader in any context.
Thanks. Michelle, that sort of touches on some of the four circles, whether it's the ability to take mental complexity and synthesize it in a way that you can communicate it in a more simplistic way, emotional intelligence, maybe even some resilience if you're getting a little pressure in the interview or you're nervous, right?
Exactly.
Chris, best strategies for developing people with high potential. What are you doing when people are like, Chris, HR, I want to be promoted. I've been in this role 18 months. Like, there's nothing, no job for me here. What are you doing to encourage people to keep growing and staying motivated in those situations?
Well, the answer is it depends. So sometimes the answer is you're not ready to move on yet. You still have things to accomplish, but here they are very specifically, and here's what you can do to get there. But other times, Cindy, and I always feel bad when I do this, but sometimes the answer is you're right. Now let me help you find another job that's hopefully in the organization. So having those crucial conversations about career and development, I think, are important. And again, you know, sitting down and having an honest transaction, if they're not ready, you know, if there's things that you see that they still need to do, but then the most important thing is to close that loop and work with them. Is it an offering from PMA? Is it going back to school? My first answer is actually not always to go back to school. It's to pick some of these other learnings and develop those skills and competencies. But the answer is it depends. And it very often is a decision tree and follows a couple different paths when I talk to people.
I'm sure a lot of people are watching today saying, what about me? I'm a high potential and man, my boss is not tuning in to Lunch with Leaders, going to PMA classes, really maximizing how to develop me. I'm getting frustrated. Michelle, you got any tips for our viewers who may find themselves in that situation? And I'm going to come to you, Chris and Mitch, on this one too.
Yeah, I think when I think about development and growth, I think it's all something that you can take on and take control of. And so, yes, there's always going to be leaders who, as Chris said before, you know, we'll say things on Lunch with Leaders that we probably shouldn't, but there are leaders that we consider to be blockers, right? And you may work for one. So how do you take control of this for yourself, right? So careers are made by you. And so I'd encourage you to think about, what are some of the things that I want to continue to learn in my job? Have I learned everything I can from this role? Have I learned everything I can? Where do I need to go to get my next challenge? Who can I get feedback from? Where can I continue to grow myself? And really take control of that for yourself.
Thanks. Mitch, what about you? You have any advice to our audience today and those who will be watching the replay if they feel like they're in this situation?
You know, one of the things, you know, even without formal title, there's always opportunities to lead in whatever position you're in and to move agendas forward, to create new programs. As I said, we're in a ecosystem or an environment where the org charts are a bit gray. There's lots of gray zones between different parts of the organization. And so you can always find a place where you can push your current position a bit without formal title, without formal change, and show what you can do. And that may not just show to your boss, but to the others around you, particularly since we're so matrix organized, what you can do. And maybe another leader picks you up as someone with opportunity and wants to pull you through. So I think there's lots of opportunities in every position. I think that's frankly one of the great things about Penn, that it has this environment that allows you to move seamlessly without formal title.
Thanks. I want to shout out Flynn Hepschmidt in the chat earlier, who said stretch assignments, give them really clear objectives, coach along the way, and then having more people view some of those folks through their work can really help. Chris, from an HR lens, different answer, similar answer?
Similar, and one more piece. So when, you know, Michelle was talking a little bit earlier about the blocker. So if you have a blocker, I think it's important sometimes to understand why. Do they just want to hold on to you, don't want to let you go because you're such a high potential, high performer? Or is there something else with the blocking? And if there is, I think, and Mitch, I think you were thinking along this way too, that, you know, get a mentor, get somebody outside of the blocker who's also in a leadership position who can help you with that and can help you get the feedback. So more of what everyone said, but I'm very much into the mentoring relationship and how you get from other people what you sometimes can't get in your own department.
Thank you. Michelle, can we be telling our high performers that they're high performers, or should it be a secret?
You know, it's funny. I think the we've bounced around on that in the actual practice of the tell people that they're high potentials. The challenge is that sometimes we get the call wrong. We confuse that performance and potential piece. So are we really sure? The other thing too is that sometimes you're fueling unrealistic expectations? So, you know, like, could you be contributing to, you know, kind of unrealistic expectations? But then it's also interesting because we don't want people to leave because they don't view that they're valued by the organization. It's kind of one of those, it depends. There's no good answer in the research these days that says organizations should definitively tell or organizations should not definitively tell, like not tell. I think it really depends on, and you can signal through your conversations, your feedback, kind of what you think this person's career trajectory could be. Maybe that's a better way of going about it than labeling people a high potential.
Thanks. Mitch, have you ever had somebody that works with you for you think they're a high potential, but perhaps you don't think that they are, they're more high performer? How have you approached that situation in that conversation? I'm sure it can be a little uncomfortable.
Well, it is a very uncomfortable conversation to have, but I think, you know, I try to focus on the positives that, you know, that what people can contribute with their expertise. These people often tend to be they have an unofficial leadership title almost in our department. They become the guru, if you will, that everybody goes to for advice, to show cases to get clinical advice. So in some way, they have an important influence, and you try to make that point. But not everybody is, you know, really cut out to be able to lead people, develop talent, develop strategy, execute strategy, change manage, all the things that we ask our leaders to do.
Great. Thanks, Mitch. Chris, similar question. Have you had people land in HR or managers that are seeking some coaching to say, okay, well, our expectations or our perceptions may be a little different. What do you do?
Oh, Cindy, I say our expectations may be a little different. And what I'll say is, I just had the conversation the other day with someone. So I think that what Mitch said, which is, you know, here's what you're good at, you know, highlighting those things and then saying, you're interested in this position. Here are the things that I don't see. So again, you either have them or you don't, you can build on them or you can, and let's go down that path. So I really do tend to be direct about what someone has and doesn't have, but realistic on whether you can fill those gaps. And that's where someone like Michelle comes in to help us identify the competencies that you need to get there.
Thanks. Michelle, Paul from the chat asks, are there any generational considerations as you're interviewing or driving performance with looking for potential, whether it's millennials, Gen Xs, whoop, whoop, shout out Gen Z, up and comers, baby boomers?
You know, there's not. The way they might express it might be a little different, but at the end of the day, you know, I would say that what's that one group, the millennials who expect things, they just want things much faster, right? But actually there's a lot of research that says they still, the generations seem to value the same things in each of their careers. It's just the speed may be a little bit different. But on the whole, we don't find that there are generational differences in potential. It just may show up a little differently because they've had different things available to them as they've kind of grown up. So, you know, that some people may not be as comfortable with technology, but the younger generations may have figured out a whole different way of learning and growing through technology, right? So
and yeah, they really missed out on not having the disc man.
Yeah, right. Exactly. The disc man, the Sony yellow one. I mean, I know the whole thing. I love that one. It was my personal favorite. But one thing I would say, and this is something that we are concerned about from an organizational standpoint, is that the younger generation, because they're in front of their screens so often, they may not be developing the EQ in the same way as some of the older generations, right? So that is something to kind of pay attention to.
Thank you. I've got to shout out Steve Hyland in the chat. I'm going to verbatim him. As a leader, it's important to be selfless in keeping your employees' best interests in mind. It's extremely difficult to lose a high performer, but it can be more difficult seeing individuals that have outgrown their current role and need an opportunity to prove themselves. Big shout out to you, Steve. Great wisdom shared there. Mitch, we've received a ton of feedback from our audience that they'd love to hear a nugget of wisdom in terms of the way you've navigated your own career journey. Any key experience that helped you become the leader that you are in maybe a minute or less?
Well, the one thing I've always looked at is to look at opportunity to make a difference that was in front of me. So I never really focused on position. I never really focused on title. I focused on how I could make a difference and what I could do to have an impact. And frankly, I try to do that now. I want to be in a position where I can make an impact, and that's what gives me satisfaction and what I've always done in my career.
Thanks. Great answer. How about you, Chris? You've had such a varied career journey. Any key nuggets that you'd share with us?
For me, it's all about relationship building and the team. And I think that in every setting I've been in, clinical, non-clinical, operation, admin, you know, those relationships are key. And you know, what Michelle said about, you know, this group of employees that are more into technology that aren't building their EQ, you know, we have to really make sure that we are emphasizing for them relationship building, because it's worked so well for me in my life.
Excellent. Mitch, what's one thing maybe many people don't know about you? Maybe even a hidden talent.
Hidden talent.
I'm curious.
Well, most people probably don't know I'm an avid DIYer at home. I've done everything from build additions onto my house to renovate my kitchen, and did every bathroom in the house, tile work, plumbing, electrical work. I'll do it all.
That's really impressive. Many people might not also know that Mitch was a collegiate athlete, as I previewed before. We could have had him on the Neil Ravitz, Andrea Whelan show. He was a gymnast from Penn. So maybe I can reveal that one. Chris Tierney, something many people don't know about you. Are you a DIYer? Any hidden talents?
I am not, but I can't believe I'm saying this again. What happens in Lunch with Leaders stays in Lunch with Leaders, I hope. My talent that my nephews had valued very early on is I can do a spot on Alvin the Chipmunk, and even was in the town show at Nazareth Academy. I have a picture somewhere, Cindy, that I'm afraid to send you because you're in Lunch with Leaders. Of me dressed in a long red sweatshirt dress with a big A on it. And I literally sang My Sharona in spot on Alvin. So
could we hear a couple bars? Can I ever persuade you?
Stop laughing. Okay.
Youngin, make a note. Chris is coming back for our holiday spectacular 2021. Chris, I love you, girl.
Can you edit Michelle this White's before our team season?
Oh, you talk about courage, Chris.
Yeah, that was good courage, and that's going to get a lot of people's eyeballs on the replay. Michelle Weitzman-Garcia, what's something many people don't know about you? Hidden talent.
Oh, hidden talent. Mm-hmm. I don't really know. I get to parent I have twin boys who are moving to college, thank goodness. Let's see. I don't think I have any really good hidden talents that way. So I like to knit. I like to make things like that. So that's my version of being a DIYer. Certainly not like Mitch, though. I can't knit you like an addition, but I do like to knit.
Listen, managing twins takes a certain level of agility. So, like, go you.
It's been my life for the past 20 years. I am, like, very happy they're going off into the ether now, and let them have their experience at colleges.
Excellent. Chris, you've gotten the most love on Lunch with Leaders for your rendition of Alvin and the Chipmunks. I love you. I cannot thank the three of you enough for being on. Thank you for coping with our technical challenges, Michelle, because your wisdom is really helpful. Mitch, Chris, thanks for emulating great talent management and really doing your best to manifest potential in others and each of your teams. Thank you so much for joining us. Jesse, if we can go back to the slides. Let's make sure everyone's marking your calendar. You are not going to want to miss our last show in July, July 29th. It is going to be a scorcher. 5 tips for stronger communications with Dr. Sean Grady from the Neuroscience Service Line, our own Debbie Foster, Senior Director of Internal Communications, and Sarah Johnson, the COO from Penn Medicine at Home. I don't know about you, but I'm always looking for tips to become a more effective communicator. So you're not going to want to miss that show. Now listen, I got a very brief announcement. Our team, me, we love Lunch with Leaders, and it's going to continue to ensure that we keep developing shows that you want to keep tuning in for. So we have impromptu moments like Alvin and the Chipmunks. We've decided to take a break for August. So we're going into syndication reruns for the month of August, but this isn't Howard Stern where I'm getting paid $1 million and then I'm taking 2 months off in the summer vacation. We're going to be working. This is the time to catch up on the reruns, the back episodes, Catherine Morrison, Kevin Mahoney, the finance class. We've got great shows planned for the fall. So if you can pull out your Outlook, mark September 9th, you're not going to want to miss the return of live. But don't worry, next week or in 2 weeks, we're back, the 29th. So don't miss that show. Make sure you're catching up on back episodes. I cannot thank you enough for all the great work that you're doing. I love being a part of this leadership community. Thank you for all your feedback. Thanks for continuing to tune in. Thanks for keep pushing forward, even when you're tired. I hope you have a good couple of days off, planning a good vacation. Maybe you don't want to miss Lunch with Leaders, but now you can go on vacation in August and you won't miss anything. Please take good care of yourselves. I look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks.